A stationary frontal boundary will slowly track east across Illinois over the next 24 hours, providing us with showers and isolated thunderstorms. Additional rain in excess of 1 inch is possible. The steady rain will end early tomorrow as the cold front pushes through the region. Behind the front, a westerly wind will bring cooler and drier air into the Midwest. High temperatures today will range from the low 40s in northern Iowa to the low 70s in southern Illinois and Indiana. Lows tonight will range from the 20s in Iowa to the 50s in Indiana. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, showers are likely. There's also a chance of isolated thunderstorms. The high, 68. The wind from the south at 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tonight, showers with a chance of thunderstorms will see a low of 52. The wind out of the south from 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny and breezy with a chance of morning showers. It will be cooler. Look for a high of 53 with the temperature falling during the afternoon into the 40s. The wind tomorrow from the west at 20 to 25 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy and cooler with a low in the low 30s and a west wind from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly sunny with a high in the mid 40s. Thursday night and Friday, Veterans Day, mostly clear. Expect a low Thursday night in the upper 20s and the high Friday in the low 50s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the mid-50s to the upper 60s. At Rockford, 45 degrees with light rain. It was 50 at O'Hare with light rain. Cloudy at both Bloomington and Mattoon, 61 at Bloomington, 66 at Mattoon. It was partly sunny at Carbondale, 68 degrees there. South Bend reported light rain and 61 degrees. At Lafayette, cloudy, 66 degrees. In Terre Haute, partly sunny, 69. Indianapolis, partly sunny and 69. Willard Airport reported 66 degrees at the top of the hour. The sky, cloudy. The relative humidity, 70%. The dew point, 56. The wind out of the south at 28 miles per hour with gusts to 37. The barometric pressure, 29.93 and rising. And at 12:39, 65 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Illinois lawmakers are back in Springfield for the second half of the fall veto session. In the first half, the General Assembly speedily passed legislation to update the state's electric grid, despite the protests of the governor and consumer groups who warned the package will lead to higher power bills. Still, when they left the State House, lawmakers left a lot of work behind. Illinois Public Radio's Amanda Vinicky takes a look at the many issues that remain unresolved.
Illinois' budget is no longer in the throes of crisis. An income tax that kicked in at the start of this year has helped to stem the deficit tide. But it has also given businesses something to complain about. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange and Hoffman Estates-based Sears are the latest companies threatening to leave Illinois. Chief on the agenda this week will be passing a package that's incentive for them to stay. Senate President John Cullerton says when other states are wooing Illinois corporations, Illinois needs to woo them back.
That's the nature of competition among states, and you have to weigh the advantage of having these people stay here. When the Sears folks stay and when the CME people stay, and if they're doing well and making money, then we get more money from them and all the other economic activity that's generated.
But what began as narrow proposals aimed strictly at those two companies has grown into a larger mix. The Senate's Republican leader, Christine Rodonio, says the GOP warned the tax hike would cause businesses to leave the state and firms of all sizes need a break.
There are hundreds of small and medium-sized businesses who are leaving the state without having a press conference, without first coming to Springfield to ask for some sort of special deal. And while CME does provide many, many jobs, as does Sears, combined small and medium-sized businesses create far, far more jobs than the great big employers.
The evolving package assembled by the legislature's leaders and the governor has developed into a virtual tax stew with a pinch of this and a heap of that. It reduces limited liability corporations' filing fees, increases the so-called estate tax deduction, and reinstates a tax credit when businesses invest in research and development. It's not all for businesses. At the insistence of Governor Pat Quinn, the package also gives a break to the working poor through increasing the earned income tax credit. Businesses and legislators are sure to dislike some of the ingredients, but the hope is that blended together, it'll have just the flavor to pass and keep businesses happy.
It was greedy corporations on Wall Street that gambled irresponsibly and got taxpayers' bailouts. Instead of limiting the pay increases for low-wage workers who try to help make differences for people, we should force those corporations to pay more of their fair share.
That's Kevin Holmes, a member of the Service Employees International Union, who works as a personal assistant to a disabled man in Springfield. In this case, Holmes was testifying about a measure that could be called during the session that unions fear would hinder contract negotiations and leave them with lower raises in the future. It's not the only fight unions are facing. House Republican leader Tom Cross has a pair of measures aimed at public employee pensions. The less controversial plan would curb abuses that have recently come to light in the media, abuses which Cross says may help his broader plan succeed, despite the protests of state workers, teachers, and university leaders who say it's unfair. It had set up a three-tiered system that effectively lowers these employees' future retirement benefits, something Cross says must be done because otherwise Illinois' pension systems will go broke.
It's not going to go away, and then you all, on top of that, see these abuses. I think the public has gotten stronger and stronger in their desire to see pension reform.
Unions are also trying to prevent the closure of a prison, juvenile detention center, and institutions for the mentally ill. Governor Quinn has proposed closing 7 state facilities in all and laying off their 2,000 employees. Legislators don't have the final say, although Quinn has indicated facilities could be rescued if cuts he made to the budget are maintained, including a cut that wipes out state funding for regional school superintendents. They've gone since July without paychecks and are waiting to see if the General Assembly will override Quinn and restore their money or potentially approve another way to pay them. Even as the cuts loom, mental health advocates and homeless shelters are requesting increases in state funding. Democratic Representative Lou Lang of Skokie says there's one sure bet that would bring in additional revenue, more casinos. Quinn has decried a package approved by the General Assembly in May as top-heavy. Lang says the latest version is similar to that one in that it allows for 5 new casinos, including one in Chicago, Rockford, and Danville, but it appeases some of the governor's concerns by including additional ethics and accountability measures. Despite the governor's stance against it, the measure keeps slots at horse race tracks. It all makes for a heavy agenda in a short amount of time. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Champaign County voters will choose an auditor next year in the March primaries and the November election, and at least 4 candidates have been collecting petition signatures to get on the ballot. Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows reports on how a controversy surrounding the current auditor is shaping the race.
Champaign County voters rejected a referendum last April that would have eliminated the auditor as an elected office. The question was put on the ballot after News Gazette reports that analyzed phone and email records to conclude that current auditor Tony Fabry spent little time at the auditor's office. In response, Fabry says he's a full-time auditor, even if he's not always at the office. But the controversy has brought out other candidates for auditor who have joined the chorus of Fabry's critics.
I think that there needs to be some confidence restored to the position.
At the very least, I think he has not discharged the duty of being accessible, being incommunicado.
Well, he hasn't been working at all, as far as anyone can tell.
Well, I know that there's very little communication that comes out of the auditor's office.
Those were the voices of auditor candidates Ben Carlson, George Danos, Kevin Sandifer, and John Farney. Farney, the only declared Republican candidate, works in the county clerk's office and has run in county elections before. He says Fabry doesn't stack up to Urbana Mayor Laurel Pressing, who won a close election 35 years ago to become the first in an unbroken string of Democratic Champaign County auditors.
I remember if you wanted to see Republicans on the county board pulling their hair out and red-faced, it was because Laurel Pressing was questioning the way they did things, and that's what we need in the auditor's office, somebody that's willing to go out and ask those questions and make people defend the way they're spending the taxpayers' money.
Farney says he would draw on his experience in the county clerk's office and his prior experience as a newspaper reporter to make sure he gets the answers he needs about county finances. Farney may have the least experience with numbers and finances of all the declared candidates for auditor, but none of the candidates claim they would do the actual auditing if elected. Democrat George Danos, whose financial background includes jobs in the healthcare and insurance industries, says he would work to make sure county government is fiscally responsible based on the recommendations of his staff.
They're there 8 to 5 crunching numbers, and when issues come up that are political in nature or involve a conflict of interest, that is the duty of the county auditor to engage in collaboration or confrontation along those lines. So no, I would definitely want to front for the staff.
Back when Republicans dominated Champaign County government, it was easy for a Democratic auditor to say she would protect the county from the other party's fiscal mistakes. But with more Democrats in county government today, the current candidates all say party affiliation doesn't define them. Ben Carlson is a self-described conservative Democrat who works in the insurance industry.
No party affiliation should be where the auditor's at. You know, it's not about whether I'm a Democrat or a Republican. It's about working together with the other county board members and the team in the office, as well as in the county.
Another issue the auditor candidates come together on is the need for greater public transparency. One popular idea is putting county financial records online. Democrat Kevin Sandifer says he wants to put information online that's easy for people to search through and understand, but he doesn't want to put a strain on the auditor's staff.
You don't want to be creating extra work for the people in the auditor's office. They already are doing an outstanding job under the circumstances, but I think that if you had someone who actually showed up for work, then they would be able to pick up some of that slack in terms of making the information available to the public.
So what does the current auditor say? In an email to Illinois Public Media this month, Tony Fabry said he did not yet have a solid answer on whether he'll seek re-election. If Fabry decides to run for auditor again, it's not too late. The window for submitting ballot petitions to the Champaign County Clerk for the March primary is still 3 weeks away. I'm Jim Meadows, Illinois Public Media.
You can find this story and extended interviews with candidates Varney, Sandifer, Danos, and Carlson, and links to their websites at our website at will.illinois.edu.
On Wednesday, November 9th at approximately 1 p.m. Central Time, the Federal Emergency Management Agency will conduct a nationwide test of the emergency alert system on this and all other broadcast media. As federal, state, and local governments prepare for and test their capabilities, this event serves as a reminder that everyone should establish an emergency preparedness kit and emergency plan. This will only be a test. Visit FEMA.gov for more information.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 8th of November, 2011. It was on this day, 1894, Robert Frost published